All right, I'd like to go ahead and call the Planning Commission meeting to an order and invite everybody to join us in a Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. And now I'd like to do a roll call of the Planning Commission. Will City Clerk David Kutaya lead us in the roll call?
Commissioner Fuller?
Present.
Commissioner Fullerton?
Present.
Commissioner Reyes Martin?
Present.
Commissioner Smith?
Present.
And Vice Chair Maynard?
Present. And now we'll move on to the public forum. Before we begin the public forum, I'd like to let the public know what to expect and how to share comments tonight. This meeting is being conducted utilizing teleconferencing and electronic means consistent with the State of California Executive Order 92920, dated March 17th, 2020, regarding the COVID-19 pandemic. The live stream of this meeting may be viewed on the television and/or online at the city's website. In accordance with Executive Order N2920, the public may only view the meeting on Goleta Channel 19 and/or online and not in the council chambers. The City of Goleta encourages and welcomes public participation during this time and have provided public participation through the following options. Public comments submitted to the City Clerk and distributed to the Planning Commission. Public comment received via email and requested to be read into the record, so as long as it does not exceed the 3-minute time limit. And public comment to those that wish to join the meeting electronically or via telephone. All of the above referenced ways to participate and or watch are provided on the agenda and on the city's website. At this point, I'd now like to see if there's any public comment on items that are not on tonight's agenda.
And I will ask the public who has joined the meeting tonight, if they would like to speak to public forum, to please use the raised hand icon within the webinar app. And I do ask the vice chair to give a moment while people can find that button if they want to utilize it. Okay, seeing none, and just quick reminder that all of the votes will be roll call votes.
Now we're going to check for any amendments and or adjustments to the agenda. Director Imhoff, are there any amendments?
Madam Vice Chair, we have no amendments or adjustments.
Thank you, Director Imhoff. We'll now move into our administrative agenda. Mr. Kutaya, could you read into the agenda item A1?
And that is Planning Commission minutes for the meeting of June 22, 2020.
Are there any corrections or comments to the minutes? Okay, not hearing any, and because I can't see you, Commissioner Fuller, did you have any comments or corrections on the minutes?
No, I didn't.
Okay. Wonderful, thank you for confirming. With this, I'd like to go ahead and see if there's a motion on the meeting minutes.
Yes, I'll move to approve the meeting minutes of June 22nd, 2020.
Ed Fuller and I second.
Wonderful. We have a second, a first and a second. Now, are there any other deliberation on the meeting minutes? Okay. Mr. Kutaya, can you go ahead and lead us in a roll call vote of the meeting minutes?
Commissioner Fuller.
Aye.
Commissioner Fullerton.
I abstain.
Commissioner Reyes Martin.
I'll abstain.
Commissioner Smith.
Yes.
Vice Chair Maynard.
Yes. With this, we'll go ahead and move on to item B, our presentation for tonight. Mr. Kutaya, can you read that into the record?
And that is the Regional Housing Needs Allocation Update.
Who will be leading us tonight?
Madam Vice Chair, it'll be Advanced Planning Manager Ann Wells.
Thank you, Director Imhoff. Ms. Wells, go ahead and take it away.
Give me a minute here while I'm sharing my screen. David, it looks like I should be sharing my screen.
We can see your screen, but it's not in presentation mode.
Okay, gotcha. Thanks. There we go.
Looks great.
Okay, so tonight I will be presenting you a summary of our regional housing need allocation, or RENA is the acronym, so you'll get used to that acronym. It will start to sound like a word after a while. The staff report packet that was released for this item addresses a series of questions that we wanted you to consider, because the RENA, as you'll see in this presentation, will be a big topic for us in the next year, at least, probably in the next couple of years, as we seek to update our housing element in response to RENA. So let's just start with the first question. That's, what is the RENA, and how is it related to our housing element? So first, state law requires that we have an adopted general plan, and in that general plan must be a housing element. So it's one of the seven state required elements. And the housing element must establish policies and programs that meet our housing need, not just how many houses that we need, but at a variety of incomes, addressing disabilities and special needs, and also planning for the housing that we need now, and then the housing that we'll need in the future for our residents, and more specifically of all economic levels. So that's the really, in a nutshell, that's what we're talking about tonight, is how do we plan for that future need at the variety of income levels. And that's called the Regional Housing Need Allocation, or the RENA. And the way the state regulates us on these housing element cycles are on these 8-year cycles. And for the state HCD, or the Housing and Community Development Department, they start the process of our housing element update and the RENA by determining what our need is. And this is all set in legislation and law. And so they look at how many units, a variety of affordable incomes in our region that we need. And then they, in our region, in this case, is the county. So they issue a number of how many we need to plan for in the next cycle to the Santa Barbara County Association of Governments, or SBCAG. And then SBCAG flips that number and allocates them to each of the jurisdictions in our region. So all the cities and the county. And currently, we are in the 2015 to 2023 planning period. It's also referred to as the fifth cycle. And what we're planning for is that sixth cycle. So we've already done the fifth cycle stuff with our housing element. We've already planned for the RENA that was allocated then. And we've achieved certification and by the state, and we'll talk about that later. But now we're planning for that sixth cycle, which is the 2023 to 2031 timeframe. It seems like it's a long time from now, but it will go fast, because there's a lot to do in between now and then. So what is the housing element certification, and why is it so important? Really, there's these four main reasons. Certified housing element lets us have more local control and avoids litigation. So once you get this all-important certification, oh, and by the way, that means the state finds that your housing element is in substantial compliance with the state law. And not every jurisdiction gets it. It's a challenge to get that certification, but again, once you do, you can hold on to your local control, and you can avoid litigation if anyone wanted to sue you on the merits of your housing element. And then that second point about fines and state enforcement, there's new state law that allows the state to issue fines and enforcement for jurisdictions that don't have certified housing elements, which we aren't one of those jurisdictions now, but we plan on staying that way in the future. And then the third bullet is this regional housing need allocation carryover from year to year. So if there's a shortfall, if you're not certified, you have to carry it into your subsequent cycle, which again, we don't for this one because we're certified. And then finally, the fourth bullet is eligibility for grant funds. Sorry about that. So the grant funds are really important, and we use them all the time. So we use them in the Neighborhood Services and Public Safety Department with the Community Development Block Grants, or CDBG. And we also use them for home investment partnership programs. These are all programs that help our community get more affordable housing. And then right now we have some grants under this because we're certified for developing residential design standards, preparing housing fee studies, and we are applying for one are sure to get for the upcoming housing element update. So they're going to help us fund our housing element. So those are all benefits of having a certified housing element. So how does this RENA affect land use planning in Goleta? So again, the RENA process requires that we demonstrate that we have land suitable for housing development for the upcoming RENA cycle and in our housing element. And that's super important, because if you don't have sufficient available land for housing, it's a challenge to have to find it. So as you can see on the screen, the first step in determining whether or not you have sufficient available land for housing is you demonstrate that you have existing availability, or you have to modify your land use plans and regulations. And that's probably where the city of Goleta would be, because we have mostly built out our housing sites that are in our current housing element. And then wanted to point out two factors, overcrowding and overpayment. And the reason I'm highlighting that is because these are two new factors that the state added in their determining housing need. So overcrowding is defined as more than one person per room, and overpayment is defined as paying more than 30% of a household's gross income for housing. You can imagine those are two big factors in our high land value community. So when you see our draft RENA that was in negotiations right now between the state and SBCAG, we have a really high number, and overcrowding and overpayment are some of the cause that have pushed the state to give us a large RENA number. And then the last bullet on the slide is a reference to SB 35, which requires streamlined review for certain housing projects, and just wanted you to be aware that we are tracking this legislation, and now it's into law, and it applies in certain circumstances. But it's another trend that you can see where the state's really leaning on the local jurisdictions, the regions, to build plan for housing, and where necessary, even streamline the review so they can cut corners to get the housing built faster. So what do communities do when they run out of vacant and buildable land? I kind of alluded to the fact that we're going to be in that position when we start our housing element land use inventory. So what do they do? What do we do? What are we probably going to have to do? We'll look at underutilized sites, meaning where we could get more capacity for housing on a site, which by intensifying development or redesignating or rezoning land that either isn't residential or could be redeveloped as mixed use. So these kinds of things have, you know, big land use implications for Goleta. And I wanted to point out that ag parcels like Bishop Ranch that was protected with Measure G are generally speaking off the table without city council involvement. But that does mean that it just puts more pressure on us to find other sites. But I did want to point that out about Bishop Ranch, because it is so important to our community And it's included in our general plan as protected as required under that measure. Another way that we can, or communities can find more buildable land is that the increasing role of accessory dwelling units or second units that some jurisdictions call them. And we've had recent law changes in response to the state's identification of ADUs as being part of the solution to our housing crisis. And since the state laws changed, we've made changes in our regulations. We have seen an uptick in ADUs, and we're hoping that they will all count, and we think they will, towards our RENA. And then the third bullet, conversion of market rate units to affordable, is we tend to often get, you know, market rate units that are expensive. And if we can convert them with affordability terms and covenants, then we would be adding to that stock of the harder to get units for meeting RENA. Of course, that then creates another problem with conversion, because now we're taking market rate units and creating a more of a demand for that. But again, these are just some of the options for us that we'll be looking at. And then there's the preservation of at-risk affordable units that are going to convert to market rate because the covenants, for example, might be terming out. So something that was protected at a certain income category, they have terms and they do run out, so we can look at protecting those. And then in some cases, if we substantially rehabilitate units that are affordable with covenants, for the affordability, then we can count those towards our RENA. But you can kind of see we're scraping the bottom of the barrel when it comes to land use planning, trying to meet a state mandate with well-intended, but it can be a challenge. So how are different types of housing treated for the purpose of RENA? So first we have the four income categories that you can see on the screen, the very low, moderate, and above moderate. And then in the table, you can see where it identifies the area median income and then the annual income range that's associated with it. And so when we talk about affordability, this is what we're talking about, this table right here, of the starting point for where we're trying to log in our affordable units to count towards our RENA. So first, our housing element will have to inventory the sites for each category, for each one of these categories. And wanted to flag that density is a proxy for affordability when it comes to state. In our current housing element, we were certified based on that density of 20 units per acre. As we had enough vacant land that we could have a minimum density of 20 units per acre, and the state counted that towards our affordability requirements, and that was important to flag. And then this units versus quarters. For the RENA, state law makes a distinction between the two. Group quarters do not qualify for housing units, at least for RENA purposes. For example, residential care facilities, group homes, and college dormitories without separate housing units are typically considered group quarters, and again, generally don't count towards RENA. I did want to note that UCSB student housing, so housing not in Goleta, not Goleta housing for students, but it on the campus, those are, of course, considered group quarters, and the state subtracted and subtracts these units from our RENA, so we're not penalized for the students that are at least on the campus. So that comes off the top before we get our RENA number from the state. And then that last bullet is no net loss. And it doesn't affect us from a RENA perspective, but it does affect us from housing development. And that's as a result of state law. So no net loss means if you're counted, if you're a site in your housing element and you're counted as a, let's say, very low income site of a certain number of very low income units, if that housing development doesn't include those sites, doesn't build those sites, then they have to be found somewhere else in that jurisdiction. So we would then have to like rezone land if housing development didn't include their very low income units. So there's a lot going on here, and state law has really changed, and we're trying to get you an update because you'll see our housing elements soon enough. Okay, speaking of, what is the status of our housing element and the RENA? So again, we're working on our sixth RENA. We're currently in the fifth, and we got our certification, and we're just plowing forward with that certification, getting grants and protection from litigation and all that good stuff. And now we're working on that sixth cycle. SBCAG is working with the state HCD on that allocation to our region. And then once they get that allocation, SBCAG will develop a methodology for distributing the RENA shares to local jurisdictions, including Goleta. We are on an advisory committee so that we're part of the development of that methodology. So there won't be any surprises, and we will share updates with you along the way as they finalize that methodology. And then the third step is the SBCAG's assignment of the draft shares to each jurisdiction based on that approved methodology. So you prepare the methods first, and then you crunch the numbers and say, here, City of Goleta, here's the number, here's your housing unit number that you have to plan for in your housing element update. Then we will begin the land inventory. The final RENA is adopted by SBCAG, and then we move on from there. And there'll be a slide with the schedule on here in a few slides. So what is our RENA that we're talking about so far with the state? You can see on the screen, on the left side, on the left box on the screen, our draft RENA determination between SBCAG and HCD is a pretty big number. It's 29,313 total units that are distributed at the various income categories that you see on the screen. It's a big number. We know that. You might not know that because you don't have it to compare it to. So we added in on the right the fifth cycle, so you could see that it's the bottom line is it's 166% increase in what our current allocation is. So it just means to our jurisdiction that we're going to have a really big number to account for when we know that we have built most of our vacant sites that are currently in our housing elements. We'll be looking for a large number, more than what we planned for previously, and we'll have to find the sites. So that's going to be a challenge that we wanted you to be aware of. And so the next steps related to the RENA and the housing element, I think you're seeing a trend, is looking at land use scenarios to increase housing potential to meet our RENA. So we'll be doing that, but we need to get closer to having a method adopted by by SBCAG. And then we'll start looking at land use scenarios. And then number two, didn't want to just leave you with, wow, we really have these big land use implications here. What are we going to do? Some of the things that we think we can look at locally is rezoning land from non-residential to residential. And that has a little bit new meaning now that we have a different trends in commercial use and needs of our community. So we'll be looking at that. We'll be looking at density increases. So we've historically kind of been not a very dense community, low density really. We'll be looking at increasing the density. We'll look at minimum density zoning, which is what we did at our last housing element. We have minimum 20 units per acre. That way you couldn't cut corners and then get around the meeting arena, and HCD liked that approach. And then the mixed use zoning in non-residential zones. Now we can count mixed use. We can count these units if we were to, for example, add residential in a shopping area where right now wouldn't be allowed or would be tightly, narrowly capped at a maximum density. So we'll be looking at those kinds of things. And then we'll also look at small and irregularly sized lot development, maybe consolidating lots so that we could combine smaller residential lots into larger ones and hopefully get higher density development, hopefully from arena perspective. Okay, qualify it there. And then of course heights. If it's higher, you can get more floor area. You could have a bigger building on a smaller lot. These are all challenges that we'll face with our community as we workshop these. And again, back on the Bishop Ranch, that will be a no touch zone for us as we look at land use scenarios without like very carefully going to the city council because of Measure G. So I wanted to point that out. There's going to be other strategies that we identify with the community so that we have as many things to, many factors as possible to be able to meet our arena. But this is the start of a list that will get much longer. And so here's the arena project schedule. This is the statutory calendar from the state to our region or to SBCAG. And you can see that we're working on that sixth cycle. There's some big deadlines coming up with the housing element due date for us is February 15th, 2023, with a lot of steps that need to be completed before that, starting with HCD officially giving SBCAG our RENA, and then RENA getting a methodology, and then ultimately that methodology will get adopted by the board. And then the SBCAG will issue us no later than August 15th, 2021, likely sooner, will get us our draft RENA allocation so that we have at least 18 months before our housing element is due to the state to workshop and revise our housing element. I didn't really touch on the whole regional transportation plan and sustainable community strategy. But those are two documents and now that are connected to the RENA. And if there's questions about that, we can answer, but I know this is a lot to listen to. So I'll just move to this last slide. So I added this slide just so you can have some context of what the city has built. So not to confuse things, because once we have a certified housing element, we're not forced to build the units. There's still the no net loss thing, and you'll learn more about that in the future. But if you look by year for this current housing cycle, you can see that in 2015, we built 202 units, all at the moderate or above moderate. And I won't go down the table and list them all, but 2020, we've actually produced quite a number of low income units and other a more spread out across the board. But you can see that we're more chipping away at more than half of our RENA with still a few more years to go. So we're not doing so bad if anyone was to measure us as far as our progress goes compared to some cities. We're doing pretty well. But again, emphasizing the point that we are not required to build our RENA once we have our certified housing element. So developers come in, they know what the sites are, and then we go from there. So I'm going to leave the slide up on the schedule, and then that will conclude my presentation, unless Mr. Imhoff would like to add to what I just explained.
Ms. Wells, I think that was extremely comprehensive and very informative. I just want to elucidate the schedule a little bit. So as you can see, February of next year is when both the official determination of the RENA is due from the State Housing and Community Development Department, and also when SBCAG is going to be issuing its proposed RENA allocation methodology, February of next year. That means from right now on, as Ms. Wells shared, we're working hard with the other jurisdictions in the county and with SBCAG to develop that methodology. SBCAG is also negotiating with the state over the initial determination that it just received. So this is a busy period for everybody in advanced planning and for me, because it doesn't get bigger or more important than this as far as land use planning in the city of Goleta is concerned. And as soon as that methodology is then finalized, which SBCAG expects at this point to be well in advance of that February due date, then we're off and running on the next step. And that next step is, how do we begin to wrap our arms around our share of the regional housing need that we will have to accommodate locally? So Ms. Wells referred to a workshopping process. There'll initially be a fair amount of analysis and work at the staff level on the advanced planning side, but we will then be bringing forward probably a range of different scenarios for how we could accommodate the RENA. We'll be seeking your input. So you will get the initial cut as the Planning Commission on advising the council on how and recommending how we go about accommodating the RENA. And for that purpose, you'll have the benefit then of the feedback that we received during that workshopping process. But this is it's a big process and an important process. And we really want to give you kind of a global sense of what we're facing and what that looks like. And I can say that you're in good hands with our advanced planning staff. They know these waters, and they'll be able to provide some good guidance. And I think if you're not fully up to speed or informed on it now, you will be by the time we're done with this. You'll become RENA experts in your own right. I should also say, and Ms. Wells, I don't think you mentioned that we have retained the assistance of outside expertise as well in this. We, of course, have our city attorney's office, but with John Douglas, we have additional long-standing expertise in technical RENA matters. So we are ready to take on what we need to, and ultimately this will be a decision for the community and for the city to grapple with how we deal with this. We're going to face tough decisions in this next cycle. And ultimately, accommodating the RENA does have the potential to change the face, the look, and the feel of the city insofar as we will be accommodating more growth. But we won't have much choice when it comes right down to it. So I'll leave it there. And we're very interested to hear your questions and your comments and the public comment on this item as well.
All right, are there any questions from planning commissioners for staff?
Chair Maynard.
Okay, Commissioner Fuller.
Thank you. I'm just wondering how we reconcile upzoning the city with regards to our general plan, which I believe requires us to live within our resources. We've had a couple of very serious droughts in my lifetime that if they had lasted another year or two, would probably be more than uncomfortable for our current residents, let alone throwing another, thousands more into our area and the potential harm of a drought.
Ms. Wells, do you want to take that or do you want me to give it a shot?
Go ahead, Peter.
Okay. This is a really important constraint on growth, of course. And this question came up. We recently had a meeting with the RENA project team consisting of planning staff and directors of all the jurisdictions in the county with HCD staff present. And the same question was posed to HCD staff. And HCD staff didn't have a really good, clear answer.
Great.
Water availability is one of the statutory planning factors that SBCA can consider when it makes the allocation to each of the member jurisdictions. And it's also, to some degree, something that that can be talked about as SBCAG negotiates the RENA number with the state to begin with. But at the end of the day, HCD really said, you have to come up with a program to address this. The phrase that I heard back was that we have to identify conditions and come up with solutions that are within our control. So it wasn't very informative. In prior conferences where this question has been asked, HCD has taken the position that the solution is water conservation, that magically we'll come up with enough water to serve new growth if we only conserve more. But the bottom line is that whatever the situation with water, we have to nonetheless provide the available residential land use capacity to accommodate our share of the housing need. Once that need is allocated to us, we have to then plan for it in our housing element, land use element, and implementing zoning. There's no ducking that on the grounds that we don't have enough water.
But I'm sorry, but how do we reconcile it with our general plan? I mean, our general plan is controlling. Well, you would be out of conformance with our general plan, or at least somebody might have the opportunity of making that case in a legal action.
Vice Chair and Commissioner Fuller, it's a great question. And at the end of the day, the projects can't be developed if they don't have water. I mean, it's a fundamental knowing on the current planning side, and we'll encounter this. We have, as I pointed out, in fact, to the HCD rep on our call a week ago, in a friendly way, I mentioned that, you know, we have several large residential housing developments that are constrained right now by water service availability, and that have, where they have applications that we've been holding for some time now and haven't been able to move forward because they don't have a letter of water service availability from the Goleta Water District. Without that, they can't move forward to approval. Our general plan require, we have a basic finding of consistency with the general plan. The general plan requires adequate water. So we can't approve a project without a showing that they have water, which means that the RENA process results in theoretical land use capacity, but those projects may never be built, or the projects that are potentially buildable in those locations based on the allowable densities and land use may not be actually in fact buildable unless and until project developers are able to come up with adequate water. That's really where push comes to shove.
And the city doesn't control the water, only the Goleta Water District does.
That's correct. And we have pointed that out again in a diplomatic way in our conversations with HCD. But the two processes meet in the development application process. And until then, we still have to accommodate in some fashion the housing need share that is given to us.
Right. Okay. Got it. Thank you.
Any other questions from planning commissioners? Commissioner Smith, and then Commissioner Fullerton after Commissioner Smith.
Thank you. I had a question. I appreciated the comment about how the state factors in the university housing at UCSB. You know, we received a public comment, a question sort of about, you know, student housing. Are the UCs or the city colleges or the state schools, are they required to go through a similar process in terms of accommodating student housing, or is that planning process really left to cities and counties for consideration?
Madam Vice Chair and Commissioner Smith, this is another really great question that is a complex aspect of the housing process. There are several different considerations in this regard. The universities don't have a RENA planning process the way local jurisdictions do. They don't have to adopt a housing element. As it so happens, UC Santa Barbara has what's called a long-range development plan, which is something that's required fundamentally by the Coastal Act. And the current long-range development plan that they have, which is good through 2025, was challenged in court and a settlement over on CEQA grounds related to environmental review. A settlement was reached between the university, the city of Goleta, and the county of Santa Barbara. The city and the county are in the process of renegotiating that agreement with UCSB, because UCSB has not, contrary to the provisions of that agreement, accommodated all growth on campus as it's supposed to. So that's one angle that is out there that exists where hopefully we'll arrive at a resolution that ultimately requires the university to absorb its growth. Of course, the university itself faces challenges insofar as the number of students that it has to accommodate is something that's specified by the state. So so they're in a tough spot to some degree as the UC system has to absorb the growth of students. From a technical RENA perspective, so we have pushed, first of all, state housing and community development, and this goes back at least to the time that I was at SBCAG and leading their planning efforts. There were very strongly worded letters from the SBCAG board to State HCD asking them to count certain housing that the university does provide toward the RENA. And this becomes complex and technical, but essentially, because the university is the largest employer in the county, it's vital for regional planning purposes, where our goal is to match housing and jobs, that housing be counted where it is provided. So that is something which HCD did eventually give ground on, and which SBCAG is getting credit for now for units that are built or that are planned to be built, but not units that count as group housing, as group quarters, only housing that are faculty, staff, or married family student housing that is actually a separate unit. So to some degree, there is an accounting that works. The public comment we received focused, as I recall, specifically on group quarters, and their group quarters provision of housing that's in the form of a dormitory counts as group quarters, and group quarters do not help satisfy the RENA. So if the university builds a dormitory, that does not assist us in the RENA process. And similarly, if a group of students decides to live in an apartment in the city of Goleta, that doesn't take it out of the RENA for us. So group quarters kind of exists in its own separate universe. And as long as we're providing the land use capacity, it counts toward the RENA, regardless of how that apartment is ultimately used. So hopefully that's a little, in a nutshell, a little view into that whole discussion that occurs around university housing and the RENA process.
Great, thank you. I'm sure it could be the subject of this presentation, but this helps me understand.
Because I did, this was a very important set of considerations at the SBCAG level as we talked with the state.
Yeah, I can see how we might be unique in other communities where there's UC schools. The UC might be one of the big employers, one of several. For us, it's one of, the biggest employer in our community. And there might be other communities like us, but some are the same and some are different. So it's interesting to think about. And then I was wondering, even if as a practical matter, the water consideration is treated separately under the law and under these considerations, do we as the city or as part of the county otherwise have a process where we're informing our water districts of this planning process, or are there sort of other communications or planning processes that take place so that the water districts are aware sort of what's happening on the RENA side?
Well, they're certainly copied on all of our noticing, all of our environmental review, and invited to participate in our process. I can't speak to the Goleta Water District, but there's a limited amount that they probably have to say over our RENA process. They have their own planning, of course, for water availability and how much we plan for is really downstream of the provision of water. So it's something that, because it's a necessary condition to the development of a project, the availability of water is in some ways prior to what we put on the books as far as land use capacity.
Okay. And then I know in terms of the housing element certification process, Ms. Wells, emphasized that this process is about, the zoning and providing the capacity for the housing, and that the building of the housing may or may not come. But my understanding is that the state does take a look to some degree as the years unfold. They're now starting to look at where we're at with housing production, and that there's certain requirements or that are triggered if you're not meeting certain targets.
Madam Vice Chair and Commissioner Smith, that's correct. So under SB 335 in particular, there is a provision for the streamlined review of projects in jurisdictions that don't keep pace with the RENA. So if we don't actually see a certain number of projects delivered in consistent with the RENA process, then the state law provides that the review is a streamlined one where there is a CEQA exemption and much more limited review. At this point, the city of Goleta is in a category where if a developer were to propose a 50% affordable housing project, that project would then go on the fast track under the streamlined review. Other jurisdictions, for example, city of Santa Barbara, are in an even more stringent category where if a developer proposes 10% of affordable housing, then it qualifies for streamlined review, and it's based on the degree to which that jurisdiction has kept pace with the development of housing consistent with its RENA.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that. Those are all my questions at this time.
Okay, we'll go on to Commissioner Fullerton, and then afterwards we'll go to Commissioner Reyes-Martin.
Okay, I had two questions. The first is in regards to the large increase in the numbers. Do we know approximately like how much is due to like a proposed growth versus like an existing shortfall? And then the second part is kind of related to that, in the overcrowding and overpayment, is how is that quantified and how much of these numbers are looking at actuals that what we have today versus like proposed for the growth later
Ms.
on.
Ms. Wells, do you want to speak to that?
Sure. Vice Chair Maynard and Commissioner Fullerton, that's a good question. There's a regional growth forecast that SBCAG prepared and the board adopted that looks at our growth and over a period of time that gives a forecast out to 40 years. The state does the same thing, and they use demographic data like the census and the American Community Surveys and some other sources that are typically relied upon for forecasts. And they look at like birth rates, and it's just the list is long of the factors that they look at for our growth, growth of jobs, number of people that will be residing here, and a number of households and head of households. And then that's what they look at all of those factors. And then they look at other market factors like the overcrowding and the cost burden on the resident. And that's how they calculate it. So it's a complex database that they use for every city and county in the, or every county in the state. And then we have our own growth forecast. And that, I don't know if that, how that answers your question, but it's a start.
Yeah.
One thing that's important is that two of those factors, the cost burden and the overcrowding, are new in this cycle under SB 330. And that has really changed the equation on how this, how the RENA is calculated for a region, and in really across the state in all regions, it's led to a significantly higher overall RENA in this cycle, which is clearly, you know, a response on the part of the legislature to the housing crisis that we face as a state.
Okay, so some of it's definitely not all projected growth, but maybe trying to fix some of the current issues that we have.
Right. So part of it is, you know, part of it is growth, and that's done. The growth is calculated in a number of different ways, including household formation rates, and it's all very technical demographic work that breaks down the existing population into different age cohorts, looks at it by a number of different parameters, and then focuses on these factors that tries to estimate future growth based on what we know about the population, in particular from census data. This is one of the reasons why census data is so important and why we encourage everybody out there, if they haven't already, to fill out their census forms. But the census data drives a lot of this. The new factors look at then things like, you know, overcrowding in units. And if you have, if you can show through census data or other data that a particular jurisdiction is really challenged in terms of the number of people in a given unit, which is to some extent a proxy for cost burden as well, then that's an argument for needing new units. And ditto if, you know, families are paying a very substantial amount of their income toward housing, then that's another reason, another indicator that, in fact, you have latent growth needs. You have latent demand that is not being adequately met and is causing a burden to people as they try to bear the cost of rent or a mortgage. So both of those things, those are real factors, and now SB 330 recognizes them, and given the realities of the housing crisis that and the data that's available, that's being borne out in the housing need numbers that are being identified for by region.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Reyes-Martin.
Thank you, Vice Chair Maynard. I just have two quick questions for Mr. Imhoff. So I understand that in the example of student housing, that wouldn't count towards our numbers in the example of, you know, a group of students living in an apartment somewhere in the city of Goleta. Is it also fair to say that wouldn't count against us with overcrowding and overpayment?
Madam Vice Chair and Councilmember Reyes-Martin, Commissioner Reyes-Martin, excuse me, I don't think that is something we can say. I think that in this case, overcrowding would count against us, even if it's students who are living in an apartment. So the RENA process will not distinguish in this case between group quarters and individual apartments if a group of students are using an individual apartment like a dormitory. So it does count against us.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. And then a question about ADUs, just for my to make sure I understand. Were you saying, Ms. Wells, that we're not sure how that will be counted or how that will be factored in?
Commissioner Reyes-Martin, we are tracking ADUs now, and our preliminary input from HCD is that as long as we're tracking the rents on them, and that the rents are qualifying at that income category, it will count. So we haven't seen evidence of that because we have a certified housing element, But so far, when we are doing our annual reporting, they're accepting that. And that is part of our application process. We request that they provide us with the rents. And we've had good compliance thus far.
I would just add that this was another topic of discussion with the Housing and Community Development representatives on our call a week ago. So many jurisdictions had the same question. How much can we count? How, you know, now we have all of these ADU requirements that say that ADUs are allowed by right in residential zone districts. So to what degree can we count them? And various regions are coming up with their own analytical approaches. HCD basically said, you know, there's no one size fits all approach, but certain regions, they gave the example, for example, of SACOG, the Sacramento region, that they are, and the SCAG region, that they're looking at the number of eligible lots, looking at the number of ADUs that have been permitted in the last couple of years, and then extrapolating approvals into the future. So combined with the rental cost information that Ms. Wells referred to, we can hopefully then demonstrate that, you know, a certain number of ADUs will be built and a certain share of those ADUs will in fact be affordable, and that HCD needs to recognize and count those toward the provision of the RENA. But that the details of that will be interesting, and we will have to engage with HCD once we have our RENA share number and once we've begun to put pen to paper and look and see how the numbers work for us on the ADU front.
Thank you. And thank you for the thorough presentation. Those are all my questions.
I have a couple of questions. I'll go ahead and jump in. Well, as we were talking about ADUs, one of my questions is, where do we see the rents coming back in? And I, this may be too early, but are they low income, very low income, moderate? What levels do you anticipate those ADUs coming in at?
Madam Vice Chair, I just want to note that John Douglas, our expert and one of the leading experts on RENA in the state of California, has joined us. And I want to welcome him and invite him to jump in here on any of the questions you've heard so far, because I think we'll probably, myself included, we'll all learn a lot by listening to John. On the question of rents, I don't know what we've seen so far. Ms. Wells, do you have a sense? Have you seen some of the rental information yet? Are we meeting affordable levels?
So we're capturing the rents when we issue a planning permit. And also, if there's no planning permit required and there's just a building permit, we're getting it from that process. And they're really on the very low side, because many people are renting to family members. So the rents are either zero or very low, and that's what we've seen so far on the rents. And then again, as Mr. Imhoff said, we'll use that to project out whatever those trends are now to project out into the future RENA so that we can count that equivalent number as we move forward in the planning process.
And how one of the things I noticed in the staff report was there was an attachment of some of the different sites that we're thinking about for RENA locations, and you had a great column within that which was very helpful that talked about constraints of the different sites. I know that today we're not going to talk about any individual project, and so I don't want to get into the specific site constraints of specific projects, but I did notice just as a trend that several of the projects had as a constraint ESHA or creek or wetland. How is that being taken into account as we're thinking about those RENA allocations? Is the number of units that we're looking at assuming that we're not intruding on those ESHAs, or does that assume that we would be looking for some exemptions there?
Vice Chair Maynard, we look at the constrained acreage that's available times the density. And then that's the number, and that's as a good thing, because HCD is observing that there are constraints on sites, that we have to identify them, though not to the degree that you might in CEQA, where the project would then further refine what that available capacity is. However, so that's good, But if we, you know, get it wildly wrong in the housing element, which so far we've done a pretty good job. Mm-hmm. But if we did get it wildly wrong, then we would have to make up those units that should that we counted somewhere else. So it motivates us to be as accurate as possible when we estimate. Right. That table that's in the packet is for our existing housing element. Mm-hmm. So you can eyeball it on some of the housing projects that have been approved through the Planning Commission and look at the number of units to just kind of see how well we've done or not, but that's the table that we use.
Can you speak a little bit to how we consider emergency preparedness as a part of this assessment or how that might impact our RENA allocation? I'm thinking on the northern side of Goleta, we're right up against a number of zones where we've had fire instances in the past, and with wildfires kicking off this time of year, and there being limited roads coming in and out, limited major roads for exodus there. How is fire and the emergency preparedness around fire taken into account as we're thinking about RENA?
If you look at our safety element of our general plan, there's maps of these various hazards. And then in the conservation element, other possible constraints like ESHA, environmentally sensitive habitat. But in the safety element, there is a fire map, and we of course use the state's designated high fire hazard zones, mm-hmm. and the city's not in one. The city proper is not in one. And so when you look at our constraint on our table that's mm-hmm. attached to the staff report that's showing the sites that we count in our current housing element, mm-hmm. Minus the constraints, fire's not one of them, because we are simply pulling from that state fire map.
So we can take into account, say, what's just north of the edge of our city. I was just thinking about the northern edge of Goleta, that there, I think there's a fire zone that's right above us, but not actually in the city. But would that affect sort of the northern edge of our city?
I'm going to ask Mr. Douglas to speak on that, because he's probably working on housing elements in communities that might be burning right now. And maybe right. there is a correlation that I'm unaware of when it comes to RENA.
John, we can't hear you. You're on mute.
Mr. Douglas, you should see an icon, a little microphone icon.
No, we can't hear you.
If it's not glowing blue, it's not on.
Okay, well, okay. Vice Chair Maynard, while we're working through those, we'll flag that as something that we'll pay more attention to that. It's a good point, and we will report back at our next update on the different hazards and how they might relate to RENA.
Thank you, Ms. Wells. There was a conversation about how the streamlining process for us only kicks in at 50% affordable housing. In the city of Santa Barbara, it's closer to 10%. How often are those numbers updated? Is that just for the whole RENA cycle, or is that more updated more frequently?
Director Imhoff, would you mind responding to that? I'm not exactly sure the answer.
But Vice Chair, Ms. Wells, I don't know the answer either, the frequency with which that is updated. Okay. That's a good question. I bet Mr. Douglas knows, but is his mic working?
One of the questions I wanted to verify, and I probably should know this, but just if you could refresh me for a moment, if there was an existing site that was currently using water, and say it was a commercial site, and it converted to a residential site, that the historic water rights would go with the project. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So that's one opportunity for us to be able to still access water. For some of the sites that we've been counting for RENA, but continue to not be built because of the water limitation, at what point do we say that's not a site that we can use for RENA anymore because it's been so many decades without being able to be built? Is there any consideration of that?
Not that I am aware of, Vice Chair Maynard. As a matter of fact, Director Imhoff brought that issue up with a meeting through SBCAG with HCD, and there was interest, but I don't know if that would translate into adjusting our number because of it.
There was mention that if a developer didn't build units that they were expected to build or that were part of the zoning of that particular space, that we would have to find a new replacement housing for those units. Is there also a penalty to the developer in that case, or is this cases where we say waived a requirement for housing?
Vice Chair Maynard, commissioners, I might need some help from the director and also Ms. Kai, but I believe that's up to us, so that it's just you have to make up the shortfall somewhere. And that's my understanding of it. It's relatively new law. I don't know if anyone else has something to add to that.
Madam Vice Chair, I don't have much to add actually, but I wanna make sure I understood the question. So in general, the net loss rules require you to provide, so you can't wind up with fewer units than you had mm-hmm. previously, or the project isn't approvable. And was your question about whether the units have to be on site or could be elsewhere?
No, I guess if the project was designed to have those, was approved with the understanding that it would have a certain number of units, but the developer didn't build the units, what would be the developer's responsibility in that case? It was sort of a responsibility question between the developer and the city.
Right. Well, I think once they're approved there and there's been substantial construction and they're vested, then the RENA calculation has long been met, and there isn't any way in which we can force a particular property owner to build those units, at least unless that was specifically provided for in some kind of a phasing plan that was part of an agreement. But I don't think there's any way that we can then assure that that be followed through. However, as a practical matter, once units are approved and they have a certain value and they've been costed out by the developer, it's likely that the developer will follow through and build them. Because otherwise they would be foregoing that the value they would otherwise create.
I would like to add a little bit to that. So typically how the city ensures that a developer builds the affordable units is by conditioning the units to be completed before all of the market rate units are completed. So, for example, we require in BLC 50% that all the affordable rate units be completed by the time the building permit for the 51st percent of the market rate units are sought. So that's sort of a, an incentive program and a threat to get them to, live up to their promises.
Thank you.
With respect to non-affordable or non-deed restricted units, I don't know if there's any similar mechanism. And Madam Vice Chair, I wasn't clear if your question pertained just to units in general or was specific to affordable units.
I was mostly focused on the affordable units, and I think Ms. Kai answered my question. Thank you very much. I guess my last question, Ms. Wells, you had referenced the Sustainable Communities Plan and bike planning was having some impacts with RENA as well. Could you speak a little bit to that? I don't know if I'm opening too much of a can of worms there.
Not at all, Vice Chair Maynard. The adoption of the Regional Transportation Plan used to be on a separate timeline than the Regional Housing Needs Allocation. So it's separating transportation as if there was no connection between housing needs and transportation. And then the laws changed and it merged them all together so that we're not just looking at transportation, we're also looking at sustainable community strategies and greenhouse gas emissions, for example, and then along with the regional housing need allocation. So the timelines are merged for these documents.
Thank you for clarifying that. Are there any other questions from the Planning Commission for staff? Not seeing any. Is there any public comment on this item?
I swear we have no one waiting on the line for public comment.
And there was a letter submitted that all the planning commissioners had an opportunity to read. Does that need to be read verbally, or is it sufficient that we were able to see that ahead of time?
Vice Chair, we typically don't read the letters unless the requester requests to have them read into the record.
Thank you for confirming that. With that, I believe we've addressed most of what we needed to tonight. Ms. Wells, is there anything else that you need from the commission?
No, thank you.
Okay. Thank you for an excellent presentation. I know we learned quite a lot tonight.
Madam Vice Chair, I would just add that we're going to be taking this same presentation item onto the City Council on September 15th. So we'll give them an opportunity to hear the same presentation and ask questions as well. And then, as Ms. Wells indicated, we'll be back in due course. We anticipate that we could have a draft arena methodology through SBCAG as early as October. And on whatever time frame that's brought forward, then we would endeavor to bring back a report to this commission and likely onto the council as well.
With that, let's go ahead to item C, the director's report. Director Imhoff, would you like to share a report tonight?
Yes, I would. I have a brief report. I want to alert the commission that we will hold elections for chair and vice chair with our two new planning commissioners seated at our next meeting on September 14th. We wanted to give a chance for Commissioner Fullerton and Commissioner Reyes-Martin to have a chance to get seated and you all to get to know each other a little bit before we brought that forward. I also wanted to alert the commission that this Thursday evening at 6 p.m., the California State Lands Commission will be hosting a town hall to update the community on the plugging and abandonment of Platform Holly and the 421 wells. And also how the COVID-19 crisis has affected the timeline and process for that work. Lastly, I wanted to alert the commission that there is a Coastal Housing Coalition housing conference, their sixth annual Santa Barbara housing conference that has been rescheduled for Friday, October 2nd from 8:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. It'll be a virtual conference that's held on Zoom. The original in-person conference date was May 1st, and that obviously couldn't go forward. So I wanted to make sure you all knew about that and to let you know that if you would like to attend, we can sign you up. It's something that I and our many planning staff attend annually, and I know that planning commissioners in the past have attended. It's always a very informative conference, and I'm interested to see how it's going to be presented this year virtually. So if you're interested, please contact our management assistant, Kim Dominguez. She can provide you with the details, and we will be able to cover the cost of that of those registrations for you if you're interested. That it concludes my report.
Mm-hmm. All right. With that, we'll go on to Planning Commissioner comments. Are there any comments or questions from the Planning Commission? Commissioner Smith?
I just wanted to welcome our newest commissioners, and it's great to have a full team this evening. And then I also just noticed, I know we haven't been meeting as frequently as we did last year, but I noticed that construction has been ongoing at Hollister Village, the triangle parcel. And then I also noticed that it appears that ground is, or construction is underway for the Cortona apartments. I didn't know if there was any sense for either both projects, if you have a sense of when completion might be happening for those.
Commissioner Smith, I don't have an exact date. I know that those are both well along on the way. They've of course completed all of their building permit requirements, and so they're free to construct now at their own pace. My sense is that both projects want to complete their work this fall, but I don't have more specific dates or details. You may also notice that development is underway at Cabrillo Business Park, with Lot 9 is under construction as well. And there are three more lots there where the project clearances have been approved, and they should be going through the building permit process shortly and then beginning construction in a near-term time frame.
Great, thank you for that.
Any other comments or questions from Planning Commission?
If I may?
Yes, Commissioner Fuller.
I just wanted to welcome our new commissioners also. Welcome to the team.
Thank you, Commissioner Fuller.
Thank you.
I'll briefly also welcome our two new commissioners. It is wonderful to have a full house and to have such folks coming in with such incredible expertise. So I'm really excited to be working with you over the next few years. And I would love to encourage other planning commissioners to go to the Community Housing Coalition Conference. I've attended the last few years in a row, and it's one of the best conferences that I've attended. I've learned so much every time that I've gone, and it's been really, really valuable for me. I intend to go this year, and have emailed Kim regarding that as well. That's all that I had. So at this point, we will move to adjournment. Here, I would like to see if we have a motion for adjournment.
I'll move to adjourn.
Okay. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Commissioner Reyes-Martin seconded. And then Mr. Kutaya, can you lead us in a roll call vote for adjournment?
Commissioner Fuller.
Aye.
Commissioner Fullerton.
Aye.
Commissioner Reyes-Martin.
Aye.
Commissioner Smith.
Yes.
And Vice Chair Maynard.
Yes. And with that, we are adjourned.